Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I do interviews with entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And I record it explicitly for an audience of real entrepreneurs who are, chances are, building their businesses right now while they're listening to me record, or while they're listening to this recording of this interview. So get this. I'm really good at researching and preparing for my guests. I'm good at reading details about them. And still, whenever I go to a doctor's office and they hand me a piece of paper telling me what to do, I get confused. And the truth is, what they do is they give me this piece of paper that's copied of a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. So it's just blurry and hard to read in the first place. And it makes no sense. It wasn't written by a real copywriter, anyone who has any concern for my understanding. And they just kind of throw it at me and they say, here, take it. Don't worry about it. I don't need to explain to you. I have to rush to my next patient. Here's a piece of paper that will explain what you need to do. Go take care of it. And for years when that happened, I kind of blamed myself. I said, you know, it's me. I don't understand it. Maybe there's something wrong with me. I didn't spend enough time reading it. Maybe it's something wrong with me. I don't care enough about my health. Well, today's guest said, it's actually not the patient's fault. We're just not arming them with enough information to figure out what to do with the medication that we send them home with. It's not the patient's fault. It's the system's fault. And he said, I'm going to come up with a company that will actually solve this. And he did. His name is Dr. Rami Cohen. He is the founder of Telesophia. They are making medical information clear. So instead of going home with this copy of a copy of a copy, you go home with some really clear instructions on video, often telling you what to do. We're going to find out how he built up this business, how well it's going, and how he's getting the medical community on board. They're not the easiest clients to get, but he's getting them. We're going to do it all thanks to two great sponsors. The first will host your website, right? It's called HostGator.com/Mixergy. And the second will help you hire your next phenomenal developer. It's called TopTal.com/Mixergy. Rami, welcome.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Andrew. Happy to be here.
You know what? Why don't we start off with an example? Actually, you know, I'm going to start off with the toughest question, the one that I think we should just get out of the way, that you don't love to answer, but I think is important. Revenue. What's the annual revenue of the business right now? Give us a sense of the size.
I mean, we can say that we passed the $1 million mark. I can't share too much about revenues and you know, it's a private company, but happy to talk about everything else.
You won't even say the names of the clients that you have, even though in confidential terms you told me before we started. Give me a sense of who's buying the service.
So, eventually in healthcare, it's really to find the alignment between those who benefit from something, to those who actually pay for it, to those who actually have access to deliver whatever you are making, and that's the hard, the hard stuff to make some kind of revenues in healthcare. But we are working with big pharmaceutical companies and providers, and also talking with health systems, and we find a way to allow some of them to pay revenues for us that allow others to provide the service and all sorts of other ways to do that. But eventually revenues are coming mainly for pharmaceutical companies.
So the people making the medication are actually paying for it.
Yes. They eventually want you to take your medications correctly. I mean, the scenario that you just described in the beginning as it's a lose-lose situation. Nobody wins from it, right? The patient goes home, doesn't know what to do. The physician is frustrated from you not following your instructions, and the pharmaceutical companies are losing over $600 billion a year because of it.
So, Wait, why are they losing that money?
So if, let's say you need to take a medication once daily and you take it once weekly, they lost it. Or you start taking the medication, but you don't do it right, and you stop taking it after a while, not taking the full advantage of it, then you don't get well, and they stop getting paid because you're not buying the medication anymore. So it's a lose-lose situation. We try to make it a win for everybody.
Because a lot of the medication that I saw on your website is for things that people have to take over and over, right? Like injectables. And so if the user has to have a long-term relationship with the product.
Yes. And a lot of the times, it's very different if you have a headache and you take a pill for the headache rather than if you have some kind of a disease that you are not really aware of any symptoms. So let's say if we take cholesterol, for example, nobody really feels it on every day. And one day you really feel the damages, but you won't feel it on a day-to-day. And just in the minute that you take the pill, that's the only time of the day where you really feel like a patient. So nobody likes that moment of taking the pill. And this is where you need to educate the patient, to make it a little bit more vivid, to show them what is the cholesterol and what are the benefits, and et cetera, and get them engaged and get them to actually change their behavior and take the pill. A lot of the non-adherence and a lot of the forgetfulness that we see with people is intentional. I mean, it's not that people want to do damage to themselves, but they kind of choose to ignore the instructions. That's one part of it, and it's a behavioral thing that we need to engage them and make them part of the treatment. And the second part is the part of really not understanding how to take those complex medications, like, you know, the injectables, the inhalers, even pills. But sometimes pills, you don't need to swallow them. You need to chew them, or you need to, you know, to.
Saying, look, there's all this inner resistance for people to take pills. First of all, they don't want to feel like patients. And second, they don't know what to do, and nobody wants to feel confused. So they just blow off taking the pills. Yeah. If they blow off taking the pills, the people who make it, who sell it, whose business depends on them paying for those pills, lose out. And that's how you convince them to pay for something that ultimately is in the user's best interest. By the way, when I was on your website, what I saw was it was videos. You guys don't just do videos? It's not just videos showing me how to inject myself with whatever new medication the doctor gave me?
I mean, how-to videos were there a long time before Telesofia, and it's great. And we know that how-to videos work very well. They reduce the cognitive effort, and they're really the easiest way to learn something new is from a video. However, in healthcare, there are a lot of small changes that are there. So if you're, you know, it's an injectable, maybe there's a different dosage, maybe there's a, you know, different device, different days to inject, different order of stuff, whatever. So all these small changes requires you to create a lot of versions. And what we have developed is a platform that allows us to send not just a video, but it is a personalized video down to the level that is saying, "Hi, Andrew, this is what you need to do today. And on Wednesday, you need to take this syringe."
Got it. And I get to see
here all the smallest details.
But just to get concrete about it, it's a text message that I get on my phone and a video that I get to see on my phone or computer, right?
Yes. Text message or an email or a QR code, whatever you want to pass that link. Once you click that link, you don't need to download any apps, anything. And just click a link and watch a video that speaks to you. You can see that your provider in the video, you know that it's trusted and it's coming from him. It says, "Hi, Andrew, this is what you need to do today." Shows you, like my patient used to tell me, "Can you show me what to do?" It's actually showing you exactly what to do, down to the level of where the plunger needs to be on the syringe and how to mix the, you know, anything that you need to do, or even demonstrate to you how to do it. Not only that, we are also doing the demonstration using the models with matching demographics. So you see somebody that you can relate to.
So if I'm a man, I get to see a man. If I'm an American, I get to see an American?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now that I understand the product, let's figure out how you built it and got it here and how you're actually selling to big pharmaceutical companies who are not the easiest people in the world to sell to. They're not just going on a Google search, buying whatever they see and making impulse decisions. But going back a little bit, what was interesting to me is you were in the Israeli army. That's where you got interested in medicine. That's how you started studying medicine. You became a real doctor. You don't just have doctor in your name. I should have introduced you as Dr. Ramaswamy. I think that would have added a lot of credibility. I meant to. But what was interesting to me was while you were in school, you paid for school by working for ICQ. ICQ was one of the original big chat apps that was an incredible hit that ended up selling for $400+ million to AOL. I remember that. What did you learn by working for that mega successful company?
So first, I started when we were a very small startup, and it was I think one of the first startups in Israel, maybe the first startup in Israel that in a very short term got into this kind of a big exit. And, you know, that was a big success story. And you learn because, you know, we were a small company and you learn how to do everything. So this is how I learned how to code and learn how to.
You learned how to code there?
I started as a webmaster and knowing very little. And when I left, I was still a webmaster, but I knew much more because we were, you know, running 20 million daily active user or something. It was huge. And we had to do everything, almost everything ourselves because it was a very small team. So you learn how to work in teamwork. You will understand the way of how to manage a project, how to do that. And then while we got into AOL, we learned the corporate world. This is actually very helpful when I'm dealing with pharma companies. And
give me an example. What did you learn by working at the big companies?
Well, unlike startups where, you know, almost anybody in the company can make a decision very quickly. And if he needs to have some kind of an approval chain, it's two people and you get it approved. And typically most of the decisions are made very, very quickly. In a big corporate, there is a process. And everything has a process.
Forgive me, but that seems kind of obvious. I feel like we should all know that, no? Where did it surprise you that a big company needs more decision-making time and people?
Yeah, but you know, it's about respecting that process, understanding the process, understanding what would be the different motivations for those. And when you're selling to big organizations, you have to take this into account.
Okay.
So, for example, you can't expect that the fact that the CEO of the company said, "This is great, I want it," it doesn't really mean that tomorrow you can do something with it. It will take another, you know, 6 months of time.
Got it. And so
run. So you have to take this into account, and this is really helpful. And when you understand kind of a big corporate culture and big corporate politics, it really helps to navigate in those big systems.
Well, let me ask you something about ICQ. One of the things that fascinated me about ICQ was, after it was sold, it was Yossi Vardi who built a reputation. He started then becoming an angel investor, shepherding Israeli entrepreneurs to the U.S. They would come a lot to Los Angeles to events. He was the guy who everyone associated with ICQ, but he was the father of one of the guys who worked there. How involved was he day to day?
I mean, Yossi was involved, I mean, every day. He was father of... He had a huge impact on
like what? I felt at the time that it was these, like, I don't even know how to pronounce their name. It was Amnon Arik and Yair, and it was those guys I thought at the time who were and Sefi, excuse me, who were the guys who were leading it. And then Yossi Vardi at the time felt like he was the father of one of the guys. And then after it was sold, I never heard anything about the other guys. All I heard about was Yossi Vardi. What did he do? What was his role day to day?
I mean, I don't want to get too much into that. You need to ask Yossi, but I can tell you from my experience, he had a lot of contribution. We were with him on a phone on almost a daily basis, getting instructions on what to do and where to do. And, you know, and he was de facto, he was leading a lot of the business side of things, and I don't think it's doing justice to say that he was just the father of. He had a huge role in the company, but you know.
But he was more of the guider. He wasn't the person who was coding up the website. He was more of the person.
I didn't code the website.
Okay, but he was the person who was just guiding them, who said, "Look, I've got experience here. I can help you figure out what to do next." And
I think it's more than guidance. I think I don't want to talk about it. I can say that personally, I learned a lot from Yossi Vardi. And I think he has a lot of great contribution, not just in ICQ, but in also in the Israeli entrepreneurship and the scene. And with a lot of other companies and other stuff that he's doing in philanthropy work and others. But, you know, that's, I let you interview Yossi and...
I should interview him. I feel like he's a fascinating person.
I'm happy to connect you.
I feel like you're a little intimidated by him. And I'm going to say I definitely am. And I don't know why. I've never met him. I've emailed him a few times, but that's it. He seems like a very serious guy. Am I right?
He's a serious guy. He's a busy guy. And as I said, you know... I can try and connect you to.
All right. I'll take that. I'll take you up on that. All right. So 2004, you were a student, you were doing the rounds in family medicine, and you started noticing that patients didn't understand what they were being told to do. And unlike me, who said, hey, it's the patient's fault, it's my fault, you said, maybe there's something else going on here. Before this interview started, I asked you for an example, and you told me about the guy who was sent home with an instruction to use a suppository. What happened?
So this guy, you know, didn't really understand the instructions, and those suppositories comes with kind of an aluminum foil on them.
Yep.
And he was using them. They weren't effective. The reason was that he never took them off the, he never took the aluminum foil, and he was using them with the package. So
he put the suppository in his bottom, let's say, with the aluminum foil on it, which means that it can't melt, it can't go into his system, and he just has this thing bothering him in his.
And it's also painful because those has like a sharp edges, so it's not the most convenient thing to do. And it was he needed them because he had an issue there. So it was really really painful, and that was you know and it says so in the leaflet. I mean it was written in the leaflet, but you know who reads those.
I get it. It's easy to skip it because it just feels like I got to just get past this as fast as possible.
Right.
So what made me, what I was thinking of when I saw that is how does Telesophia then resolve that? You guys can't show a video showing people how to use it, right? Can you?
We can. And we show them the specific instructions. So if, for example, somebody needs to self-inject and he's
using. No, let's talk about a suppository. That's the kind of thing where you're talking about a body part that you don't usually want to show on video. Are you showing it with
some kind of an animation? There are ways to work around it.
Got it.
But you at least show that you need to take it off the aluminum foil. We just did, you know, take even a simpler example. Taking a pill out of a package of aluminum foil, some people are using it on the middle and breaking the pills. In some pills, this is really important that you need to just push on the side. We even show that on the video. So we can go and show you the specific details because the video is already very concise, very relevant just for you. A man doesn't get the pregnancy warnings if they are not relevant for him. Then why do we need to spend 30 seconds on that? Let's focus on how to take the pill off the box. This is more important.
So the suppository is kind of a shocking example of how people misunderstand how to take medication. Give me another one that's a little more typical that you would see as you are making the rounds.
So a lot of times people are not aware that, you know, even with the simple pills, everybody thinks that all pills need to be swallowed. But that's not the use case. Sometimes you need to chew them, otherwise they won't be effective. Sometimes you need to put them under your tongue and wait for, you know, 5 minutes for them to dissolve because otherwise they won't be effective. And people would just always swallow them. A lot of times people are not aware of the small warnings that there are.
How would you know that? If I didn't put a pill under my tongue and just swallowed it and came in the next day to see you, how would you know that I didn't do it right?
I won't, but I will see that there are no effects. So this is a loose situation where I would say, sometimes in some medications, you only get the side effects, but you won't get any benefits. And then we say, oh, the medication doesn't work. We need to stop the medication. We maybe need to go to a more expensive medication or potentially maybe dangerous medication. And it was just because somebody was misusing. I have a great example for this.
Yeah.
We did a work with hepatitis C where you had two vials, one with powder and one with just, you know, saline, like water, right? Sterile water. And you had to mix the two. Apparently, some patients were afraid from the powder. So they were just injecting the saline water. Now, this is a medication that costs $7,500 per week. They were throwing it to the garbage and injecting water. Right? That's the most expensive water in the world right now.
Yeah, wow.
And they were losing because if after 4 weeks you don't show any good results, nobody will pay for your treatment and therefore they stop the treatment. So they lose completely just because of misuse. So the pharmaceutical company lost, the insurer lost, and the patient of course lost because he lost his chance to getting treated because they said, oh, it's not working for you. Maybe your body doesn't react to that medication.
So, doctor, what point did you say? At what point did you say, I'm not going to go down the path of being a doctor and explaining things and teaching people and helping them this way, and instead I'm going to start a business? At what point did you make that decision?
So I was in vascular surgery, and I was working there, you know, getting patients, preparing them to surgery, sending them to with instructions to how to prepare the surgery. And most of the time they didn't follow those instructions. And they didn't really understand what am I going to do with them, with, you know, with the surgery or catheterization, whatever. And I was sitting there and, you know, sketching stuff on a piece of paper saying, oh, you know what, this is what we're going to do. We're going to, you know, this is what the vessels look like. And in the surgical world, this is sometimes considered a waste of time, unfortunately. You know, talking with patients, we don't have enough time as physicians to really sit and educate the patients and make sure they understand, because you're working in a hectic environment and you have to run and be in the OR and not in the room talking with the patients. And then I said, why wouldn't I just do it in a video format? So we started thinking about the concept of creating videos to explain patients all their instructions.
Just for your patients or as a business?
Initially, I thought about my patients, and then I said, okay, well, this is not just my problem. It's a global problem. Let's make it a business, and let me combine, you know, my passion to technology, passion to medicine. This, both of them are getting combined together. So I thought it would be a great idea.
Okay, let me pause right there. We're going to talk about the first version and what that looked like, because this is this is not an easy thing to create a first version for, and continue with the story. But first, I've got to tell you about my first sponsor, a company called HostGator. And in fact, I'm going to tell you about a guy who uses HostGator, a guy named Saeed Balki. You know how some people go on Facebook and they post pictures of their dinner that looks beautiful, or some will show off by posting pictures of their cars? Have you ever seen that? Well, this guy, you've seen it, right? People, they post a car. Hey, look how beautiful my car is, how impressive. This guy posted a picture of the Wells Fargo Bank, and he goes, I just bought this building. I'm now the landlord of this. And that's what he does. He buys real estate. And so I got together with him one time and I said, how are you buying all this real estate? And he says, I got a website. It's called WP Beginner. And I knew about it because I interviewed him about it. And I said, it's that big? He says, yeah, yeah. So sure enough, I go and I look it up. According to SimilarWeb, he's got 8 million monthly visitors. It's huge. He says, so from that, and then I have some software that's built on top of that, where people who are like in the WordPress world will read my blog, and that does well from advertising. And then some of them will end up trying some of the software that I built. We're talking. I say, you know what, Saeed, let's go have lunch and just continue the conversation. So we walk out, we get to this lunch spot. I sit down, he sits down, and then he goes, oh, look at this. I go, what did he find? He pulls up a coin. I think it was a penny. Dude, I'm not kidding. I think it was a penny. He holds it up and he goes, I found a penny. I go, this is like, who's this guy? But that's part of his personality. Super cheap about things. So he can pump money out of his business and go buy real estate. And that's what he wants to do. And I think he even buys his real estate for cash, doesn't even want to buy a mortgage. That's his passion in life. So the reason that I'm saying that when it comes to HostGator is because I want to see who's he using for his hosting company. And it turns out he uses HostGator. And the reason I bring this up is he's a guy who's got 8 million monthly visitors, more than most people who are listening to me are going to have. And he's still hosting his site on HostGator. Why? Because HostGator will scale up with your business as it gets bigger. They've got the reliability that a business like his and mine need. And it's super inexpensive. So a guy like him who cares about every penny, because he wants to save it up to buy another Wells Fargo bank building, can save up his pennies and not blow it on hosting packages. So if you're out there listening to me and you don't like your hosting company, or you want to save some money on your business by shifting over to a new company, or you want to start off right, start off the way that I just started my new chatbot business, the way that he's hosting his company, by going to HostGator. And in fact, if you want to save even a few extra pennies, go to this special URL where they're going to give you up to 62% off their already low prices. Go to HostGator.com/MixerG. HostGator.com/MixerG. You'll get up to 62% off on metered disk space, unmetered bandwidth, unlimited email addresses, tons of free templates to make your site look good. And they will even give you a $100 AdWords offer to help you promote your business. Go sign up right now, HostGator.com/MixerG. Right, one of the things that I've committed to doing is telling better stories in my ads. So I'm working on it. This was one story. I spent like 20 minutes before the interview started with you saying, all right, I got how Telesophia works. Let's see if I could spend some time understanding this, like getting a good story for the sponsor. He's a user. Great, we got the story. All right, so I understand how you thought about solving this problem with video. I understand where you were going with it. I'm curious about what the first version looked like.
So the first version, we said, let's start with something simple. Let's go with medications. We started with statins, medication for lowering cholesterol. And I said, I need to show like two versions, and I wanted to see if how people will react to that. So we created completely manually. I mean, no technology was there, just as they call a minimal viable product.
Yep.
We created like two boxes with QR code on them, and with two videos that we filmed in my home, with instead of a green screen, it was like a green blanket, and there was not good lightning. And it was, if you look at this video today,
But it was you on camera with this blanket behind you saying, here's how to open up the pill pack.
Yeah, this had to, it was a personalized, but it's like one-off, right? And then we put a QR code on the box, and I went to visit some friends that I had in New York, and they were working in advertising. And by the way, you asked about the AOL connection. So we all met and we all know each other from the AOL days. And I said, I want to get their opinion. What do they think about it? And I showed it to them, and I showed it to others, people in the video industry, just to see what they think, and people in the medical. And I just was going with a piece of paper that had printed on it a box with two QR codes that led to some, static video that was hosted on Vimeo or some like free video. And when you scan the QR code, you get a video. But just the notion of, seeing a box with pills, and I had the leaflet with me. So when I demoed it, I said, this is the leaflet. This is the box. Scan this. They scanned it. Boom, there was a video explaining about it, and people reacted really positively about it. So I said, there is something here. Initially, everybody thought that I was crazy because of the number of variations. For just two simple medications, initially we had 14,400 different videos, different versions for just two.
Why?
Simple medication. Just because, the statins come different pills, different shapes, different colors, different imprints.
And so you recorded 14 different 100 videos?
So we created, initially, it wasn't technology, but we created 14,000 different videos, and everybody said, this is completely unscalable. This is just two medication. You have 14,000 videos. How can you scale up? And then we evolved the system and the technology. So now everything is dynamic, and we are generating the videos in real time.
Before we get into that, I want to understand a little bit more. Why did you pick statins? I did a Google search for what a statin is to understand, and I see things like Lipitor. I look at a picture of what people would have to take. It just looks like pills in a pill pack. Why did you pick that? It seems kind of obvious for people how to take a statin, no?
Yeah, it seems kind of obvious, but the real life is that people are making a lot of mistakes with it. They are not taking them as often as they should. They don't really understand why they need to take them. They take them because somebody told them, but that's not a good incentive for you to do it.
Also, the video isn't just about take it out of the pill pack.
No, it was also explaining what is a statin, why do you need to take it, and how to take it properly. And
complete with a cartoon or something.
You're not supposed to drink any grape juice with it. And most people don't even know of it. You're not supposed to, if you are feeling some muscle aches, it might be because of it. You should be aware of it. So we started with this, and they were kind of common, and they were like the most simple ones that we wanted to start with something simple. Later on, we moved to things like surgeries and
okay, let me just stick with this. I get now why you would go with this. You're saying it's easy to explain, and people don't understand why they need to take it, and that's leading to lack of compliance, and that's leading to issues. All right. When you showed it to people, you showed it to doctors, you showed it to pharmacists, and they then were supposed to send it to their patients. When the patients saw it, what did you learn about those first videos that you recorded?
So the first version, you couldn't even send it because it's personalized to one person that didn't exist. But the second version with 14,000, then we learned at first that they were too long. We were doing it completely wrong. We're trying to put everything in them. And everything was there, but they didn't retain anything because when you are, these are the 70 side effects that could happen. Nobody can learn anything. So we learned that we need to keep this to be more concise, more clear, more to the point. And there are other stuff that we learned on how to better engage the patients, shortening the intros. And we still learn even today. We are always improving the videos all on it.
How did you know that? How were you able to see that people didn't want a long video? Were you just looking at the stats?
So initially we showed it to several people and then we interviewed them and get their, like, what do you think?
You show it to a patient and then the patient would sit down with you and tell you what they thought.
Yes. Yes. And we send it to them and maybe call them, 3 days later and said, what did you think? Can you give me some, and we did that with a few. And then when we look on the stats, we can see exactly by 10% progress when the people stop watching the video. And our goal is to get you to the end of the video. And we get much better engagement rate than any of the standard engagement rate that
you were looking and the engagement rate wasn't great. When you talk to people, they admitted they didn't watch it all the way through. All right. I kept saying 1,400. It's 14,000. How did you create 14,000 different videos?
Initially, it was a lot of rendering of a computer, and then we had there was some automation to it. It wasn't completely done manually. There was some automation for it, but it wasn't scalable just because of uploading the videos. And then, if you want to change something, you need to.
But who did it? Did you hire someone to do it? Did you do it yourself?
Yeah, well, at that stage, we already had a company and we raised some funds, to do that.
So once you got doctors and pharmacists to say, yeah, this has legs, we can understand it, then you went to raise money or did you get a commitment from them?
No. Once I showed it around and got the initial feedback that there is a need for it, that everybody said that, technologically wise, that's not feasible and you will never be able to handle the real complexity. And, if just two medication brings you to 14,000 different videos, then what would you do if you need to do? And by the way, today on that system that completely automated, we are supporting 11,000 medications. So we have infinite number of videos.
But wait, what kind of proof did you have or what kind of traction or evidence did you have that people would use this before you raise money?
Just the initial feedback of the
audience.
And we had, it was a very small round, but that helped us, start the company, build the company and start working on the first version of the technology, the second version of technology, and then we raised additional funds once we got interest by bigger organizations.
So you know what? So I went to Crunchbase to see where you raise money. I could see that you raised a seed round, but it's not saying from who. Where'd the funding come from?
So I don't think those websites are always updated. Our funding is coming from a VC that is specific for digital health, a VC called Lionbird, sitting in Chicago and Tel Aviv. We have a strategic investor, which is the hospital chain from Germany called Ruhn Klinikum, and we have some private investors that are invested that want to remain private.
Okay. All right. So you started raising money. Then you hired people to put together these videos. They created 14,000 videos. Did you personally call up the people who used those videos or was it someone else?
I did some of them and we had someone else who did. So it wasn't just me, but I did some of them myself. And I think it's really important when you are getting the feedback if for the founders or the entrepreneurs to do it themselves, because you would be able to find things maybe that are said in between the lines. Maybe you're not asking the right questions, right? And I think it's really important to understand what your users are thinking, and you need to be close to your users. If you are putting too much distance and you just hire a company to do it for you, or hire somebody to do it for you, You give them a set of questions, a lot of the tacit knowledge will stay there and not get to you. You need to be closer to the market, closer to your users, especially in the beginning when you are trying to kind of find what is the right way to do it.
I was wondering how you got your first customers, and then I saw the notes from our producer who said your first customers came free because you were part of a Microsoft accelerator, right?
Yes.
How did that work? Microsoft introduced you to whom?
So we were part of Microsoft Accelerator, and then there was some part of the accelerator where we were in Atlanta, Georgia, and we were part of another accelerator that was partnered with Microsoft. And over there, they introduced us to a pharmacist in Atlanta that was the first user of the system. And actually, we got from him some feedback, and he was using the system in a way that we would never imagine
how
that people would use it. He was actually, instead of sending the videos to patients, he would show them to them on a mini iPad and give them time to watch the video while he is filling the medication in the box. So he was using that gap time. And then after that, if they had any question, he would answer them. Which was pretty smart. If you have a mini iPad, you're gonna use that kind of a dead time where he goes and put the pills in the box.
Right.
Let you watch a minute and a half video, and then if you don't have any questions, great, you save them time. If you have any questions, he's there to answer. And we never thought about it. We said like, oh, let people take this and watch it at home. And he said, no, I want them to watch it at the pharmacy.
Oh, that is clever, because people are kind of frustrated that it's taking so long, but if it's used properly, got it. Okay, makes sense. And then did you get other clients that way?
Other clients, then we moved, as I said, we were working with pharma. With pharma, it's a little bit different. With pharma, it's a very long sales cycle. I mean, the average of the industry is about 18 months, something for those who are
18
months,
yeah.
Average. It can be longer. This is the average. And so it's a long process. Also need to take into account it's an expensive process. A lot of lawyer time and due diligence that pharma would do to you, the security and safety and all that, and that you need to go through. So that's something that people need to keep in mind if anybody out there is aiming at these kind of companies, they need to know it's something that you need to be prepared.
And you knew instantly they were going to be the clients. They weren't the ones who had the pain.
I didn't know it instantly. I wish I knew instantly anything.
Who'd you think the original clients were going to be?
What? Sorry?
Who'd you think the customer was going to be?
I thought initially that the providers would be the customers because they have a lot to benefit from it. Unfortunately, not always they have the resources to pay for stuff. So
did you try to talk to them and see if they would buy it, and that's how you discovered they didn't have the resources?
Yeah, I did. I did okay. Talk with a lot of players in the healthcare industry. And pharma were the ones who were, I can't say really low-hanging fruit because it wasn't that easy, but they are the one who has the funds and the ability to actually move the things forward, but much easier than, you know, a hospital system.
How did you get in front of them to ask them that and to know that they would be willing to do it?
A lot of conferences, a lot of footwork, a lot of, you know, let me show you a quick demo of what this could do. And you know,
it's
a lot of work.
Who?
Conferences, yeah, a lot of
them. Who at the pharmaceutical companies seemed interesting? What's the job title of the person who you were able to get to?
Sure. So at the time, there weren't many, innovation or that. Digital. There are some rules now that didn't exist when we started, so we had to kind of find a way. So we would pick on anybody who just works at pharma and say, oh, what do you think? I said, great, can you introduce me to somebody? And then you need to get in front of 5 to 10 people in the organization before you can start anything meaningful. today, I think it's easier because today there are, in almost any major pharma company, there is somebody who's in charge of innovation, there is somebody who's in charge of digital, somebody who's in charge of patient experience, etc. So it's much, much easier to kind of, they didn't even have that role back in the day, and that made it much, much harder. Today, it's much easier. And in fact, when you present in a conference that has people in the crowd that are relevant, those would come to you. And that's most of our, clients are inbound requests that, you know, saw a demo in a presentation, saw this, read it on Forbes or whatever, and they said, oh, we want to do something with that. And can
but
you
when
show
it was- Before you got into Forbes, before you got all the press, it was just you walking around, I imagine, with something like this tablet, just saying, yes. Hey, can I show you something? Does this make sense? Would you want it? That's it?
Yeah.
Essentially, looking at their eyes to see, do you remember what excited them when you showed it to them? Because sometimes when you show people in person, you get to see where they get bored, where they get interested.
I won't name names, but I can tell you that at least in one case, there was a C-level officer of a pharma company that I chased many, many conferences. Every time showing her an iPad, can I show you them? She's like, no, not interested, not interested, not interested. Showed it at once. She said, oh, nice. Well, I don't know what to do with it. You know what? Maybe. And then after a while, I showed this again, and she actually showed the demo, watched it, liked it, ended up being one of our best customers and advocates. So, you need to keep trying. You need to keep trying. You need to do it politely. I'm not saying that you need to be annoying, but you have to keep trying. And if somebody tells you no, it doesn't mean it could be not now. I think also the market changes because of pharma was doing a lot of transformation in their business model, understanding that they losing patents on many of these medications, losing revenues, and thinking like, what can we do in order to go beyond the pill? And because we had these relations with them so many years, even before they were thinking about it, it really helped. And once they were ready, we were there with a ready product for them.
All right, let me take a moment to talk about my second sponsor, who is TopTal for hiring developers, designers, finance people. And to do that, I'm going to tell people about this guy, Doug McKay. He is a first-time entrepreneur who said, you know what? It's too hard to find the services that you need to run your business, to find the software that you need to run your business. He said, I know, it's going to be my breakthrough idea. And he had the idea, but he said, you know, if I talk to people about it, they're not going to understand it. I need a visual. In fact, he's a guy who won, I think, a daytime Emmy. So he had experience in visual. He had experience in showmanship, but not in entrepreneurship. So he went to TopTal and he said, can you get me someone who could design this, who could mock it up, who could create it? And TopTal introduced him to someone named Anna Myasheva. Oh, Miley Sheva. And Anna's a UI UX designer, a lot of front-end development experience. And she worked with Doug. She understood his concept. She took his idea. And within just 3 weeks, she gave him a design that he could use to show. And he said, all right, this is it. This actually is something that's making sense. People want to use it. I want to raise some money. So he went back to TopTal and he said, you know, you guys also have a finance team. And I said, yeah. He goes, here's what I could use. I want someone to help me tell my story in the financial sense so I can raise money. And so they introduced him to a guy named Jeffrey Fiedelman, who he hired. Jeffrey's a guy who worked with HSBC Bank, Morgan Stanley, and helped create a venture capital fund. So the guy had a lot of experience. And so Doug hired him part-time to help him put together an understanding of what investors want, a pitch deck to explain to them, and how to answer the questions that investors are likely to ask him. That's how Doug got prepared. And he went out there and he got, let me see, he got interest from 6 VC funds. And I think he was able to raise money from, I don't know who, but he did raise money in the process from doing it. Finally, he said, all right, great. Now I have my money. I have my design. I've got to go and get someone to build it. He went out and he hired an agency to do it, but it was taking too long. It was costing too much money. And he said, you know, screw that. Let's just go back to TopTal. TopTal is going to cost a little bit more, but it's worth it. I can't deal with these headaches. He went to TopTal. He spent a little bit more, but it turned out that in the end, by hiring developers from TopTal, he spent less money to have this product built out than if you would have gone with a cheapo agency that was just taking too long. The reason I'm telling you guys this is because if you're looking to hire and you want to hire fast and good people, really the best of the best, go to toptal.com/mixergy. You can do exactly what Doug did. Hire designers, hire finance people, hire developers. And these are the best of the best, people who have experience for years. All you have to do is go to toptal.com/mixergy to get a special offer of 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. If at the end of the period you're not 100% satisfied, you will not be billed. Really, they want to make sure that you're happy, and they know that if they say yes, that they could deliver for you. So here's the URL again. It's toptal.com/mixergy. That's top as in top of your head, tal as in talent, toptal.com/mixergy. Boy, my voice is going. I wonder what it is. The only thing I can think of is I did karaoke late into the night on Saturday night, but we're recording this on a Wednesday. That should not be impacting me. All right. I should do a little less of the heavy lifting in this conversation. Just let you talk instead of straining my voice even more, but I can't stop talking sometimes. All right.
I'll send you a video for it.
Sorry?
I'll send you a video for it.
Is there a video for this?
We'll make one for you.
You know what? Once you've figured out we need to customize these videos, we're going to come up with software that will automatically customize it. I understand it, right? So statin, they do the same thing. They deal with the same part of the body. So the part of the video that explains what the medication is helping, I could understand how it would be unique. Would be consistent. And then the part that is about this specific medication would be different. What I'm curious about is, how do you address me as Andrew in the video? How do you get it down to that level of personalization?
So that's a simple part of the personalization. The more complex one is all the clinical stuff, because it's not just about the medication, so it's the combination of medications and protocols. And I can say that, for example, we have videos for a discharge of people with pneumonia, where you have 106 quadrillion, that's 15 zeros after they were 106, different versions for every nurse for every 30 days, right? So that's the level of complexity that we are dealing with. So a name is, and about 60 to 80% of the Lego blocks that are building the videos are computer generated. And we've built a system that's a very complex system. The technology is patented, and there is some technology, heavy technology behind it of how to produce the videos and how to generate the video in real time in such a short time. It's like 400 milliseconds and you have a video file.
Those videos pieced together to make up the final product that I end up watching.
Yes. And then because it's a real video file, you don't need any specific player. You don't need anything. You just can watch it on any device that is connected to the internet. Smart TV or phone or tablet.
I like to hunt around to see what's on people's site. I can see that you use Vimeo, but I don't think that your videos for patients are in Vimeo, because I think I could just download them. The finished product is available in a standard straight up video file that I think I could just hit. I mean, I could right click on my computer and save it.
Yeah.
Right.
Completely. Yes. And it's hosted on our servers because it's generated on our servers. And that's why it takes 400 milliseconds. If we for static videos, we use Vimeo, but just because we want to separate those from our live system, dynamic systems. But the dynamic videos are generated. When you click play, we just generate the video and show it to you. And then it's always up to date, always with your, the latest and greatest. And you can change stuff easily because it's dynamic. So if you wanted to change this 106 quadrillion, whatever number of versions, and add another logo, you just add the logo. You don't need to change all these videos. Just change that part. It will be built now with that whatever new logo.
Then do you have a video with every single person's name in it so that you can slide it in and say, hi, Andrew or Barbara?
In a way, yes. There are some tricks to it, but in a way. So some names, if you give me some kind of an odd name that wasn't approved, then the system will default and say hi there, or
got it.
Hello,
got
sir,
it. So you do create all those.
Also, because we are working in medical, every piece of Lego that goes into the systems goes through an approval process. This is really important, especially when you're working with medical institutions or with pharmaceutical companies, to really respect their medical, legal, and regulatory team, you know, request. So I can't just do a system, even though technically I can do it. I just can't do a system that whatever you put in, it will put out in the video. There needs to be some kind of limitation to what the video would say, and it needs to be predictable. And the beauty of that system is that everything is predictable. I know exactly what the video will say, and the medical, legal, regulatory team that needs to sign off on the system knows that only things that were approved will be said in the video. So it's not just whatever you...
But they don't approve. They don't get to see and approve every variation, right?
No, they don't. They won't be even feasible, but they approve the Lego blocks.
Do you remember? That, so the pieces are, but then...
Right.
Okay. Do you remember the first sale that you closed? Do you remember when you first closed it?
Yeah, the first sale. Yeah, I remember it. It was a really exciting day. Yeah.
How'd you find out? Tell me about it.
So that was the first sale with a pharma company, like a really meaningful sale. Working on that, I think maybe altogether it was a couple of years, but working on the deal itself, just on the deal from the time that everybody agreed on what we want to do and just signing the deal, it was almost a year long of process with lawyers and everything. And then the minute it was signed, it was a really a happy moment, not just for us, but also for the client, because they were also working on it for a year with their teams and lawyer and recruitment and, you know, and doing all the security checks and all the different audits just to get it signed. So that was really an exciting moment. That's kind of the minute it showed, oh, this can really work. I mean, it takes a lot of time, needs a lot of endurance, but in the end, it can also work.
And you said that it's very expensive. I understand the lawyers. What else? What other expenses go into it?
So time. Time is expensive. When you are, if you are just a single entrepreneur, you know, working by yourself, that maybe is easier. But once you start a company, you start having a burn rate, and it burns.
So what do people do while you're waiting for that first sale to close for the year?
Yeah, so you work on multiple channels. You don't just do one deal. You work on others, other initiatives, other things to do. You're working on demos. You're working on, so just everybody's working.
Is it
working
constant on sale?
The system. Sorry?
Sorry, everyone's working on what? I interrupted.
Everybody's working on other stuff, and you can't just do it one sale at a time. You have to do multiple together, and then hopefully they won't all close on the same day, because then you all also will be overwhelmed.
And so, it's just constant demo. You told our producer, look, one of the things that's most frustrating about this business is I have to keep proving myself. I have to prove that the technology works. I have to prove that the business model makes sense. I have to prove that it's scalable. It's constant proving. And so does that mean that before the first client signed up, that they wanted to make sure that you could produce some rent? What did they ask you to show? What are some of the things that you had to prove?
So I had to show first, you know, some kind of example videos. Right, so you have to prepare a system with similar complexity to what they expect, and to show them that it's working. You had to show them the technology, like the technology for sending, technology for any system that will allow them to manage the patient and send them the videos. And then we had to go through some ridiculous stuff. Right, they asked us again. It's a pharma company, so they said, can you show me the insurance of the trucks? What trucks? We want to make sure that all your trucks are cooled and are insured. I don't need trucks. This is stuff that goes online. We are not using trucks. We are not going to ship the product for you with the trucks. It's going to be a link. And you have to go through this as well. So, and again, it sounds funny, but you know, it's another hour or two of your lawyer to talk with their lawyer to explain, listen, there are no drugs involved, we need to take this off the contract. And that's how you end up building, you know, a year-long process. And again, because these companies are not used to work with startups.
That would drive me so crazy, that the level of ignorance would drive me nuts and the slowness would drive me nuts. I want to see results right away. Do you ever feel like, you know what, maybe this is not going to work because you go for months, over a year without a customer?
We had one very big frustration. We had this huge pharmacy chain.
Yep.
And we were working there on a deal. We were talking with all the C-levels, you know, I'm talking about a very big pharmacy chain. And talking with them, having a deal worth for us like $5 million a month, right? It's huge for a startup, but our scale, especially then, it was like, until today, it's going to be huge. Huge deal. We're creating a free demo, putting all the efforts of the company. I think maybe over a year, all the company was focused on this. You know, we were doing other stuff as well, but this was like 90% of the company focus was on this deal. And then just before it was signed, they had a merger. And they released like third of the management. All the C-levels that we talked to were gone. All the people that we talked to were gone. Change of management, you know, the deal, the loss of attention for a few months. You didn't have to talk with anybody. And then once the dust sank, you could see that nobody was still there from the people that we knew. And you had to start everything from scratch. And of course, that deal went away. And that was a huge frustration. That was something that, you know, I would have said, it will never work. No matter how, and we had a successful POC that we did with them. We created 2 billion videos, video combinations, a system for them. Everything just was working great. Just for them, just to show them that it can work. The bigger system was much, much more complex. But just for showing them the complexity that we can handle, we had a 2 billion versions system showing them that. And we did demos like all over the country. And we met with all the C-levels and everybody were aligned. And we thought it was a 99% sure thing. And then suddenly something happens that you don't expect. And I think this is a lesson maybe to learn that sometimes, you know, the startup company, always it seems like the startup company is the unstable one and these big corporates are the stable one.
Yeah.
I can tell you, we had quite a few big corporations that had merger acquisition. One had kind of they got overtaken without their free will by another corporate, and so they got separated to a few different companies, and people get fired and people move, and so they are much more hectic than sometimes the startup company. And everybody thinks the startup company will not be there in the end of the contract. Maybe, but a lot of times the people that sign the contract are not there in the end of the contract. And if it's a year-long contract or a two-year contract. So I think, you know, we need to take this into account that those big corporates are not as stable as you would think.
You know what? I was going to try to figure out who it was. And then I looked and I saw there are tons of acquisitions in the pharmacy space right now. The top search result that came up for me was from Pharmacy Times, which who knew that was a thing. Pharmacy Wars is the headline, an era of acquisition, mergers, and losses. And then as you scroll down, you start to see CVS Pharmacy acquires Red Cross's pharmacies, Amazon to acquire PillPack, someone acquired Target's pharmacy. It just goes on and on and on. So
a lot of M&A activity in this world, and a lot of consolidation also in the healthcare, also with health systems. By the way, hospitals are doing it all the time. Also, a lot of mergers and acquisitions. Yeah, it's working in an unstable environment, and the startups are not really the. At least we can move fast, right? So they are unstable and move slowly. So that's the risk that we need to take, and it's a risk when we are working with such a big organization. And that's why I said you need more resources if you're working, because you have to work with few of them, not just one of them. Like we did, that was a mistake. We got out of it eventually with the help of our investors.
Let's end on something more positive. What's the best part of having achieved what you've done so far?
I think, you know, a few weeks ago, we launched another product for multiple myeloma, which is some kind of a blood cancer. And they launched it and they invited me to talk about it in a patient conference. typically we talk with the pharmaceutical, with the physician, but not with the patient. And for me, after many years being out of the clinic, seeing the patients, you know, coming and shaking hands and saying thank you for what you're doing and sharing their stories of how they got confused and how the video helped them, that was really a moment that you feel like, wow, we're actually doing good, and thinking that, you know, we're helping hundreds of thousands of patients. Just in the last year or so, we helped over 300,000 patients or something of that sort. You know, that's a big thing, and it's not just yet another you know, advertising optimization or something that we are doing, but something that's really we feel the kind of a do good.
So I can understand that. Really, I'm looking at your videos; they're really nicely shot. Yeah. Anyone who wants to go check out the site or the videos, it is telesophia.com. And I want to thank my two sponsors who made this happen. The first will host your website, right? It's hostgator.com/Mixergy. And the second will help you hire your next phenomenal developer or designer or finance person. Who knows? They might have doctors at some point in the future. These guys just keep growing their business. Well, Dr. Cohen, thanks so much for being on here.
Thank you, Edward. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
I'm here. Congrats. Bye, everyone.